Welcome to a special edition of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, brought to you by Cooper Tires and the Justice Brothers. We're looking back at the inaugural season of IROC, the International Race of Champions, started at Riverside Raceway in Southern California in 1973, then moved from the road course to complete its finale in February of 1974 at Daytona. This glorious concept created by Roger Penske, his friend, former football player, then automotive executive Les Richter, and also Mike Phelps. Truly an idea of bringing the world's best drivers together from Formula One, IndyCar, NASCAR, and seeing how they would all fare with a single vehicle at specific disciplines, both oval and road course, and then crowning a champion at the end. Often forget that for that inaugural season, Porsches! Porsche 911s, Carrera RSRs, created by the factory at Penske's request. These were road cars dressed up for competition, but these were not purebred Porsche race cars by any stretch of the imagination. So I called RP and said, hey, we have this somewhat weird thing. I'll admit it's a little bit of a contrived reason. We're at the 45th anniversary of the conclusion of the first season of IROC, which finished in February of 74. Why don't we talk about where you came up with the idea, how you went to Porsche instead of other brands, and he shared some fun stuff here in between meetings. And then we get into our pal, the all-time great Uncle Bobby Unser, who finished third overall that first season, won the second season of IROC when they moved to Camaros, and knowing how much these first-year Porsche Carrera RSR IROC cars go for at auction today, Bobby's comments about their qualities and about their value today, it just had me crying laughing. But it's typical Uncle Bobby. You believe at least 50% of what he says, and if you know Uncle Bobby, it's just more classic stuff from the three-time Indy 500 winner. And then climbing out of that first season, we also spoke about the second season, and he does get into one story. He finally admits to cheating. It's been a story he's told to us many times in private for years, but admits to cheating in 75, but blames AJ Foyt and getting the idea from him on how to cheat. He also questions Mark Donohue, who won the inaugural championship, as to whether he monkeyed with the Porsche that he was driving, the car that he developed for the IROC series. So it's just the usual madness with Uncle Bobby, but starting off with the class of RP, so thankful to him. And so, again, all we're trying to do here with my little podcast is hopefully give you something that's amusing, might teach you a little something, and if nothing else, gives you a couple of laughs about our beloved sport of motor racing. And with that said, let's get going with RP, then a longer conversation with Uncle Bobby, all brought to you by Cooper Tires and the Justice Brothers.
Well, when you think about the IROC series in 1974, the relationship from Porsche, because we were obviously involved in the 917 program at that point and had built a very close relationship, and Mike Phelps was a gentleman from California, along with Les Richter and myself, you know, decided that it'd be great to have this International Race of Champions, Formula One, NASCAR, IndyCar people all in one car. But at that point, it was difficult to determine, you know, what would be the right vehicle to use. And so I thought that if I went to Porsche, that maybe I could get the cars I needed to run the series. And because of our relationship, I remember I really did it on a handshake, and they were really weren't sure why I needed pink ones and green ones and all these other colors when their basic color was black and silver, probably at that particular time. But it worked out because, you know, the cars were reliable. We got them all on time. The deal was a good deal for us. The only hiccup was that we thought we could sell those cars after the series and found out that they were not emission certified vehicles that could be driven on the road. So as we sold these vehicles, which was obviously how we expected to get reimbursed for our purchase, you know, we had to find people who understood that. And I think that was probably one of the biggest dents in my fender as we went forward on this on the program. But Overall, it was a great program. Donahue, of course, won it in a white Porsche. I have that car today. It's probably one of the cherry Porsches that I have, and I don't keep a lot of those cars, but that was pretty important to me. And, of course, Richter and Mike were part of it. And then later on, of course, Jay Signore really took it over with his wife, Barbara, and ran that because I was so involved and everything else. But we went from one manufacturer, I think, from Porsche to Chevy to Pontiac to Dodge, et cetera. So, we had these chassis ultimately that we could put, we call composite bodies, the same thing we're talking about in NASCAR today. We were using those back early in the 70s. So, it's a great history. It's a shame we don't have something like that today. But because of sponsor conflicts and someone driving a Chevy when they're with Ford or a Dodge, et cetera, it just started to not be as easy to attract the drivers. They all loved it. And, of course, being able to run on the big speedways like Daytona, that created, some interest from some, but other people didn't want to get in the high-speed ovals with the cars we had. So, overall, I think it was an event that was well-planned, well-executed, and, we sold all the cars. I've got a few of the ones that Earnhardt and a few of them in my collection. So I got to give a real hat to Jay and to Les Richter for, really helping us put that together.
RP, what do you remember from that inaugural season when I spoke with Uncle Bobby, who's coming up next? He was mentioning how he was convinced that although all the cars were spec, he was convinced that Donahue had some special springs to get rid of the oversteer that everyone else fought. And, I'm sure there are many accusations of cheating and tweaking. Do you remember this just being, a bunch of people grousing about who might have preferential treatment? Or were some of these, what folks we call today legends, playing somewhat nicely among each other?
Well, I think the cars were all the same. Porsche today, we buy these cars from these competition cars. There's no question. And, Donahue was probably the best driver in those days on the road courses with that particular car. And I think that, he prevailed. I know someone didn't like their car. I forget who it was and tried to blow it up. But because it had the rev limiters on it, they couldn't do that. I forget what driver that was. But, look, it was a great effort. I can be honest with you, all the specific details, that's so long ago, you're really pressing my memory. But I do have the winning car, and I guess that's my favorite part of the whole, entrance of Porsche and the start of IROC.
Let me ask one final thing, RP. So we look back at these cars, just an amazing, it's like a crayon box with every imaginable color. They ran for one season. I'm sure you've noticed some of these cars have gone across the auction block for more than $2 million. I know you're a man who knows his wise investments, but I'm sure you weren't looking at those cars back in 73, 74 saying, oh yeah, one day, multi-million dollars for these things.
Yeah, you think about it, it would have been worth 25 or 30 million or probably more than that when you think about it. But no, that just shows you these cars and some of these special events, any winning cars or a special event vehicle, is today and today's, historical collection group of people. They love this stuff. So I'm glad we're part of that. But I never thought of that, or I'd have kept them all. Believe me, I wasn't that smart.
Thank you for making some time for me, my friend. I'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Cheers. All right, Bill.
And I know so many people maybe remember IROC involving Camaros or other big American iron, but that first season, Porsche 911 RSRs, just something that is so glorious. I've seen some of those go across the auction block. Some of those cars from the first year where you competed go across the auction block for more than $2 million.
You know that? Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
I wouldn't give you $500 for one of them. Freaking, they were junk,
Well, what I was wondering, maybe we could just start by how, granted, it was you and, all the top drivers of that era from in this first season back in 73, 74. But, it's you, Mark Donahue, Peter Revson, David Pearson, McCluskey, Gordon Johncock, Richard Petty, Bobby Allison, Denny Holm, A.J., Falmer, Pearson, I think I mentioned, Emerson Fittipaldi. How did you guys get roped into this? There's money involved, so I probably just answered the question there for you, but
How did this first year of IROC and these Porsche crazy things come into your world?
Well, it was another race. And period. And you're going to, I'll put it like you're the promoter, you bring in the Formula One guys. Well, man, that makes Bobby Unser want to go kick a little ass. I don't know if I can do it or not, but man, it's racing, and I love to race. And so when Penske and all those guys, you know, brought in the IROC cars, going to run Riverside too. Wow, this is neat, you know. And I mean, we really went for that. But we worried about what? We had a big worry, and it was Mark Donahue. Mark is not a bad race driver, incidentally. The guy knows where the throttle is, you know. Between myself and Take a Fit of Baldy, anybody you want to take that was in that race, we're all measured up against Donahue because it's Porsche and it's Donahue. Now, what does that tell you? And Penske. Now, God dang it, we're not so dumb that we don't know. But those guys have been over there doing their whatevers that they're going to do, their tinkering, whatever the hell, stuff Bobby Unser would do.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is they have that totally locked up. There's nothing we can do about it. So now we get in those cars in practice, and I'm going to tell you what, Father, let me just give you one example. I come up, I go by the pits practice time.
So this is Riverside, I believe, was the site of the couple rounds.
I always look at that deal like Riverside because it's the best track around, you know. So at any rate, I go up by, I enter those S-turns, the first one, you know, and I'm hauling ass, but I'm going to have to do that. And then that goddamn car just takes off and jumps off the road, and I go down, and then I'm spinning now into the goddamn dirt out there, and the goddamn both windows, the front goes and the rear goes. In other words, I shuck out two windows right away.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm just going to hear tell you, I'm going backwards in that SOB, and it shucks out a goddamn one of the windows, the rear window, I think it was, on the backwards. And I mean, that really, pardon my French, but pissed me off. I mean, ain't a thing I could do about that, because the thing's gone by itself. And now, you didn't ever see Mark spinning. Donahue, you know, the guys that I thought were super real good, you didn't see them spinning. But Bobby Unser spins, and goddamn, he's going to be pretty quick, you know? And I just didn't like that. I thought, man, the guy could not only bend this car, but he could get hurt. This goddamn car doesn't care which way it goes, frontwards or backwards.
Mm.
And I didn't like that. And there was no way to cure it. Number one, the one thing that IROC did, which was good, is didn't let the drivers work on the cars. Now, everybody would or should worry about me.
Yeah, well, I was going like to say that would have been the Uncle Bobby rule, whether they wrote that down or not.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I knew that. And because right away I can make changes, I can do stuff fast. The other guys, but at any rate, that was my thoughts, you know? And so they had to, the car was no good. Nobody liked it. I don't care which driver I talked to, except for Donahue, nobody liked the car. The car was a piece of shit. And we all talked to each other. We didn't have meetings. We're not trying to get them thrown out. We realized that Roger and whoever the hell, S. Richard, who all the guys that are involved with it, they didn't want to bring a bad car. That's for sure. But they did, you know. And the car just didn't handle well. And it had a pretty giddy-up-and-go engine, but it didn't handle very well. And so there's nothing we can do. What do you do? Go up to Les Richter, as big as he was, and start screaming at him? you'd liable to throw a hand down on top of your head, you know? And it just was no good a car.
What do you recall handling-wise, Bobby, that it didn't do that you needed it to do?
The rear end was always loose. Didn't have enough adhesion, period. In other words, when you went from the right to the left, that sumbitch go to the left till it got tired, you know? Just totally didn't go through the turns good. You know, you take down that long back straightaway at Riverside, and you got a turn nine down there. I mean, that back straightaway's pretty long.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty quick, you know? But when you get there, you got to be able to go through that turn pretty quick. And when you come off, you don't want to hit that goddamn cement wall that was on your left over there, you know? That thing ain't going to leave. Hmm. And it just was a bad handling car. But like through turn six up there, where if you didn't get to, if you went out to see anybody running faster or slower, see what they were doing, you go to turn six. That tells you the pro and the con to everything right there in that one turn. If you're not getting through that sucker fast, forget the rest of it, you know? And that was in Dan's age when he invented Riverside or Parnelli, all the same, you know?
Sure.
All the same.
So one thing that was really interesting about this inaugural IROC season, Bobby, is the format, again, for those who maybe recall IROC from the later 70s, 80s, 90s, etc., they probably remember it as an oval, an all-oval thing with kind of a heavy NASCAR driver angle to it. But this first year was pretty awesome with the first three races were held at Riverside, so definitely road racing discipline was required. And like I said, we had Bobby Allison, Richard Petty, David Pearson. You know, there are some cup drivers there for sure. And then they closed the season at Daytona, which is just an interesting mix as well. I mean, looking at the results, even though you weren't a big fan of the car's handling, Donahue won the first race at Riverside. You were second. Revson was third. Race two at Riverside, Falmer won. You were sixth on that day. Race three, Donahue won. You were second again. And race four, Donahue won. Donahue was the inaugural IROC champion. Revson was second in points, and you were third. And you finished third at Daytona. What do you remember just from the collegial aspect of this, knowing how unique it was, a format where, as you mentioned, you take some Formula One current stars, NASCAR, IndyCar. It was a pretty amazing group of drivers to go out there and play with.
Oh, shit, I guess it was. Man, I'm telling you what. You know, make an ulcer right in the center part of my stomach thinking about those guys before the race, you know. Yeah, no doubt about that. But, you know, it still, I think, came down to the fact that not one driver that I talked to that I can remember liked that friggin' Porsche.
Mm.
Yeah, not one. I don't care if you pick out your Formula One guys and make it poor Petty. You know, If I was a good songwriter, I could write a terrible song about Richard Petty and having to live with that Porsche idea. I mean, the poor guy was whooped, you know, worse than a puppy dog. I mean, he couldn't get along with this new, whatever the hell that little bug is, you know. He couldn't get along with it. And I don't blame him, but of course, he didn't adapt to any of the IROC stuff. But some of those guys were damn good race drivers in their own way, in their own place. But they couldn't hit a lick with that Porsche. I mean, to tell you what, you know, for Petty, I just really felt sorry for him. And I did at all the races, but that one especially. He hit that Porsche, man, all he wanted to know is, when can I go home?
I guess the last couple of things that come to mind, Bobby, is looking at the act of actually having to race these cars. So you've mentioned that there was an oversteer that you just could not get rid of. It's one thing if you're in practice or qualifying and you essentially have the circuit to yourself. It's another thing, though, if you and other drivers, you know, have cars that are really, really loose and, you know, dealing with a lot of oversteer. What was it like to actually race either at Riverside or to close the championship at Daytona? Obviously, you're going to want to get close and get by people, but it sounds like there might have been an extra degree of safety since a lot of folks were wearing out the steering wheels.
Well, they were, though. Boy, I mean, a whole bunch were wearing out the steering wheels. I tell you what, the car, Father, it was just a shit box, you know. I know that the people are paying these horrendous prices for them today, and I know some of the people that have enough money that would buy one, you know. But I just, they just didn't have it done, you know. I mean, the cars just didn't. They, as far as I was concerned, they didn't handle good enough to run in any race. Now, what we all suspected, and I, it's not an accusation at all, but we all suspected that Mark was able. Listen to this analogy a little bit. If you're the only boss, and I guess you're driving the car too, I guess you ought to get it set up the way you want it. So we all of us, all the drivers that I knew of, totally thought Mark was able to dick with the cars a little bit. You know, different air pressure, different spring, mostly springs is what the biggest argument was. And, you know, what does he have for springs in there? Well, do you know? No, I don't know. Do you know? No, I don't know. Does anybody know? Has anybody checked? Has anybody suggested this? It's all no's. And you know, if it had been up to me, if these type of rules would have been allowed, Jesus Christ, I'd have been jerking a goddamn spring or two off that thing of Donnie using off of mine. Well, I just would.
No, I know. There's no doubt.
I mean, I got to just keep asking, how come he goes fast? Is there no other good race drivers in the world?
Well,
I mean, as soon as we got to where the cars were somewhat equal and maybe a little dickering around there, but then, golly, Pop, you answer a little faster. And so did some of the others. Not Petty, though. He's just not going to do it.
Well, the last thing that comes to mind, and I know this would have been dear to your heart. So, well, granted, Donahue won 3 of the 4 races. He took home $54,000 for his success. Revson took home $21,200, and a certain Uncle Bobby cleared $19,100. So I'm guessing your pain and suffering with an ill-handling car was hopefully eased a little bit by not a bad payday for those 4 races.
No, not a bad payday. But you know, another thing about that, Father, is I'm a race driver, you know? In other words, 20-some-odd thousand versus 50 or 60,000, I'd moan and groan about it, but I'd get ready for the next race, you know? In other words, that's okay. But for sure, you know, I like the Camaros a lot better. I didn't like the way they did a lot of things with it, but that's mostly the rev limiters, you know. But they were at least a lot better raceable cars. And you notice that they didn't keep running those friggin' Porsches, you know.
Well, you also, once they stopped running the Porsches and once you started getting into the American Iron, you won the championship, I believe, soon thereafter, the IROC title.
Yeah.
And there's also, I think, if you wanted to regale us, a story or two of Uncle Bobby, the Uncle Bobby vehicular improvement cloak and dagger routine. I know you were certainly accused of pulling rev limiter chips and all kinds of stuff, and they called in the FBI to look down the backstretch at Daytona, I think. Maybe
midnight.
Maybe we can close with that story. All of course, which you refute and never happened, of course, but, you know, there's rumor.
Yeah, there's rumor that it did happen, and you know, of course it did, too. And you know, I couldn't help but come loose with this thing and tell the truth on it, because, you know, they had pushed that damned rev limiter to the point that the rev limiters were no good. You know, like, let's just say you and I are out there, and your rev, you'd go down, like, let's say between 6 and 7 turns. It's all the difference in the world with just those 2 turns. None of the rest of the track was making any difference, because the thing is if you run that Chevy engine past, I think, what's a lot of time has gone by, but past something like, say, 7,500, okay, you're going to kill it. It's going to come apart. And we all know that. We run sprint cars. We run them in stock cars. We run whatever, you know. It's gonna pitch itself apart. And so you know that. But so now they put the rev limiters in, and you can take your car out whenever we take it out to try it. And the goddamn thing cuts the engine off. Like, I come out of turn 6, I'm in second gear, I shift it up to 3rd. Okay, now I got that little short straightaway back there, up over the hill, right? And the goddamn thing will quit on you before you even start up the little hill portion of it.
Yeah.
And that's bad, because now, first thing, you had all the torque in the engine pulling the car one way, and then all of a sudden, you gotta back off, because it just gets up there and goes, da-da-da-da-da-da. Like that, see?
No power. No power.
But it doesn't even quit in an even way. It just quits on you. And so now you got to get yourself ready for that second turn down there to the left. That's going to be fairly sharp. And then you got to go through that thing, but you're not going to get that till you say halfway through. So you're not going to get your power back till then. So that means that the engine had to get slowed down to that. And it doesn't work. It doesn't happen. It isn't part of the real world that you live in. Now, you got another choice. You probably already thought of that. You go ahead and shift it from 3rd back to 4th. But you only back to 4th for maybe 1 to 2 seconds.
Sure.
You can't do that. It just won't work. So now the car is wiggling. Now you're trying to go fast. It's going to tell you, no, you ain't going to make it, man. And so now that's the only place on that entire racetrack that it would help. Down the back straightaway and more straightaway speed and all this type of stuff that a lot of the drivers think didn't work then. It just that you've got to keep at least the power the same. If you back off and you downshift, it's got to be the same every lap. You can't do one lap and not shift it down to 3rd till a certain point, and the next lap you're going to 4th. It's the same place, you know. You can't do that. And all drivers are basically the same. And so all I did was make the rev limiter. I just put a piece of wire across the wet rev limiter.
And what did that do, dear sir?
Yeah, well, it made a hell of a lot easier, I'll tell you that, you know. But Foyt, you see, I already figured out. I got the idea from Foyt in Goodyear. Because Foyt cheats all the time. If we don't know that Foyt cheats, we're all really dumb. And Foyt wasn't really, in the whole series, he wasn't going very fast.
No, I've never heard anyone suggest AJ has cheated before. This is just a scandalous allegation the world has never heard before, Bobby.
No, I think it's terrible, you know? And so the Goodyear guy, the night before, I think it was, because, you know, I do most of the testing for Goodyear. And so I got to know some of the people. So now I'm out of Mark's deal about everybody he's associated with owns that friggin' IROC thing. So I'm out of that deal. Now I'm back into my own deal. Okay, I get the Goodyear guy, and I say, so where'd you get the wire? How long is it? Oh, just about this long, he told me. And I say, well, wow, where'd you get it? Radio Shack. And so I asked the guy, he says, okay, where'd you get that? And he told me, he says, Radio Shack. Well, he's one of my buddies with the Indy cars, see, the same Goodyear guy. So they're basically going to do what I ask them to do, you know, because I'm a big part of that testing deal. So we decide, and I says, well, do me a favor. Before you go eat tonight, stop by the Radio Shack and make me up one. Tell them to solder it, though. Don't leave it loose. And so the guy says, sure. So he got it for me and gives it to me the next morning. Well, shit, I've already leaned over enough times, and everybody's watching me all the time. But somebody must be worried about me cheating. It means somebody's doing it, you know. And it might have been more than Floyd doing it, too. At any rate, I stopped on the back chute, undid my top seat belts or the shoulder harnesses, reached over there and put that thing on with two little alligator clips. Simple, you know.
And what kind of performance boost did you get all of a sudden?
Well, I don't see, that's the thing. I could have done all except for that one place I told you, between turns 6 and 7, Father, I could have done the same speeds, because I don't get anything down the back straightaway, don't get anything through turn 9, and I come out of that front straightaway, I come out of that thing in third gear, and shift to fourth gear going up over the hump to the left there, you know?
Yeah.
And all of that is the same. I'm never getting near the rev limiter, no matter, see? In other words, you could do it, but you'd be wasting your time. And plus, you're going to be blowing the engine up, you know?
Well, and also, everybody on the pit straight there at Riverside 2 would definitely hear if it sounded like one car was winding up higher than other in the rev range, too. So.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And nobody ever caught me. The only way I got caught on that thing, if you expect that somebody thinks they know something about what you're doing, is the fact when I would stop on the back straightaway and put the wire on it. Now, you don't think, surely, that I'm dumb enough to stop on the front straightaway and hook up the goddamn wire. Wouldn't do, you know. Hell, fire, just copy Floyd a little bit, you know. So that's all I did. And, of course, he wasn't even in the race. I mean, I took off, left everybody. But you know something? If you notice, even when I did the at Riverside now, even when I did the deal for TV, I swear, now, you know, years go by, whatever it is, and so I'm going to do the track opening on television. It just be a one driver driving the car around the racetrack and talking while I'm driving it around, telling you, okay, now you got to turn to the right. This one is third gear. Turn to the left. This one's second gear. Stuff like that. I had to do all that, see, for TV. And you know that I qualified third quick time. That was just off of one of the extra cars.
Wow.
See, so Riverside and myself got along really well. In other words, really well. So I think that was part of it. Not all of it, for sure, but part of it. If I didn't think that little piece of wire would help, I wouldn't have had him get it. It probably cost a lot of money, you know?
I love it. And also, what was the backstory about this? Of weren't you having to dispose of it or trying to, you know, bury the evidence?
But they can't think I'm that dumb. You know, God damn, these guys, that's all they thought of me. Shame on them, you know. But I had to park someplace again and get rid of that thing. And, you know, that thing probably, most likely, cost him $4, the Goodyear guy, to get that for me. Now, if anybody thinks I'm going to throw it away, be stupid. I don't throw $4 away for anything. So I just took it off and put it in my pocket where I put my cigarettes. I was smoking in those days. So I wouldn't waste such a nice, expensive little thing, you know? And so those guys didn't have to walk it all night. I could have saved them a lot of time, you know?
But tell us about the suspicion that came in that led to that all-night search party for folks who are convinced that you'd thrown out or someone said you've cast off the rev-limiting cheater device you came up with, and there was a whole search party there.
You know, they did that till midnight. Yeah, they did that till midnight, and I wouldn't throw a good wire away. I mean, that'd be stupid. So I put it in my pocket, right in my pocket. If the coach would have come up and said, Bobby, do you have it in your pocket? I couldn't lie to him. I mean, I just wouldn't do that, you know? I mean, if a driver did, I don't think I'd be that honest. But I wasn't that honest with everything else, you know? In other words, if the coach would have done that, or Pinky would have come up and said, do you have something in your pocket, or what did you... No, they didn't. They didn't give me the courtesy of giving me, I guess, enough credit for being able to figure that complicated mess out, you know?
I'm not dumb enough to let you know I'm smart enough to cheat, or something like that, however
that's
we should
right.
phrase it.
You got it figured out now, boss. You got it figured out. You know, in all my racing years, I could never think of something that I cheated on in a race car, like a big engine, you know, like all the things the guys get accused of cheating on. I just didn't do those things. It takes the fun out of it. But boy, that IROC thing, I'm telling you, and you got a deal. You're running against the top of the Formula One guys in some cases, the top of the NASCAR guys. I mean, you know, that's Katie kicked the door open, you know? That's I got to giddy up and go. And those guys, they're going to be doing everything they can. I mean, if you and I are so dumb that we don't think those NASCAR guys cheat, then there's something wrong with us, right?
Again, I've never heard such accusations about NASCAR drivers. I mean, they're in you have to drag them out of church to go to the track on Sundays, Bobby. I mean, good Lord. But it's just such, again, it's just such a fun time to think about where you have, you know, just, my goodness, you look at the names involved. I mean, again, you finished third the first season of IROC, you won the second one. There are a couple of changes with drivers, but you talk about Formula One. You know, Jody Scheckter was there. Ronnie Peterson was there the next year.
Yeah.
Graham Hill, Jody Scheckter, Johnny Rutherford was added in from you know, IndyCar and such. Just, again, these amazing names. And, yeah, I mean, granted, I would be disappointed to learn if everyone was just on the up and up and wasn't trying a little bit of monkey business. That would actually be the most disappointing story from the 73, 74, 75 era.
Yeah. No, I 1,000% agree with you. 1,000%, you know. It just, you know, I mean, the cheaters are going to be the NASCAR guys, and obviously you got to look at the king himself, Mr. Foyt, you know.
Well,
and I think, like on a road circuit, come on, I could outdo Foyt on a road circuit, you know. Sometimes on the ovals too, but he wasn't the hardest outrun. But boy, if you want to get a guy that's going to get you dinner,
your dander flying around inside a little bit, it's going to be Floyd, you know. But it was, some of the NASCAR guys are just as bad, I'm telling you. Was Pearson in that thing at all?
Yeah, he was there the first 2 years. I mean, at least the first two seasons that we've discussed. Yeah, Pearson was there the whole time.
Okay. Yeah, see, now there's a guy that I really liked. I mean, we were on the stock car team together sometimes with Ray Nichols, but I really liked him. You know, he was a good, good person. We played the shitties on him up at Pike's Peak, and we wasn't always right, totally fair with Pearson, but well, what a nice guy he was. And so, I mean, do I think that Pearson ever cheated? Come on. I mean, Lordy mercy, I was on the same team with him sometimes, you know.
If he didn't before, he had a good teacher. We'll put it that way, right? Our dear departed friend,
right.
Mr. Pearson.
Yeah.
Well.
But there's a lot of those guys like that, you know. If they were NASCAR, you had to look at them, and you had to look at them as much as you could. And if... I mean, to tell you, if you didn't talk to them the right way, you ain't going to find out anything, you know? And you could judge it by speed. You know, like Allison, I don't think Allison, I'm not saying that he wouldn't, but I don't think he cheated. I never, in all the races I've run against him, places I've been, I've never watched him thinking that he's cheating, you know?
Mm.
But I never watched Floyd, and I didn't think he was cheating. Isn't that a strange difference, you know?
I love it. I love it.
Rutherford wouldn't cheat. Poor Johnny, he doesn't go good on a road course anyway. And so it wouldn't make a heck of a lot of difference. Schechter, I don't know. Jody's a good, nice person to get along with, but I don't know that they'd worry about him too much in an American car and all that jazz that they have to change over to come over to our type of racing, you know?
Oh, just sounds like fun and crazy times.
It was fun, though. You know, that IROC thing was really fun. Really fun. But, you know, you got to realize that there was a lot of pride. A lot of pride that went into that IROC thing. In other words, I just could not imagine Bobby Unser getting beat by some foreigner, you know? And it's just the attitude that we all had.
Well, I wish we had something like that today. I know that there's the race of champions where they jump in and out of different types of cars and little tiny squirrely circuits in, you know, stadiums or otherwise, but I do miss the more original format of road racing, ovals, all drivers from different disciplines. That was real fun.
Oh, it was really, really, really a lot of fun. You know, and we tried to get them to do that. In other words, I don't care whether it's Penske or the coach, you know, but everybody tried to get them to do that. You know, let's do it that way. Go to some track that we don't normally run at. So now we're really equal. See what I'm getting at?
Yep.
In other words, not that it was still going, but pick a trend. You know, wake up today and IROC just let you know you're going to run Trenton. Boy, wouldn't that be nice, you know?
Mm.
We'd love it. I think everybody would have liked it, except, of course, the guys that never run Trenton, you know. But there was too many tracks like that, in my opinion, that they could have put us at, and just go get it, guys. Now it's a different track. Nobody's used to this one, or not that used to it, you know.
Are we? What do you think? Are we going to see you back at the Speedway this May, or
yes?
All right.
I'm going.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
You know, I thought about maybe not going this year because I really did a lot last year, and I'm not complaining. I'm just saying I really...
You wore yourself out last year. That's
for
sure.
I did. But you know, Father, I'm not talking about that so much as I just loved last year. Was probably the best year I ever had.
Mm.
And of course, somebody like you might say, well, you ought to be happy. You were the star of the show whole month. Well, that's okay, and I like that. But God damn it, it was nice to see that many fans that interested. You know, the big boss got me to go down there and do the parade. And I quit doing them parades years ago. But I said for Doug, I said, okay, you know, for Doug, I just about do anything. And because he's been nice to me, so, you know, I love to be nice to him. And so I get in that parade, and, you know, I look, the guy right in front of me is Doug Bowles.
Hmm.
Yeah. And in a car, you know, with his name on the side, I think it had, and waving it to people. And I got a little trailer. Doug had made up the trailer for me out of something, you know. And I got the biggest goddamn yippee-doos than almost any of the people that I could see. You know, even when it was over with, the drivers come walking back trying to get their car to get out of there. I'm still getting the biggest. And that's what really turned me on. And I told Doug when he called me, I says, Doug, I says, man, I quit doing them things a long time ago. I really don't like them, you know. I says, it's too much. And he says, Bobby, I said, I'm going, Doug. I already know. I know. You want me to go? I'm going. Thank you. I'll be there. And I went to it, and I enjoyed that thing so much you wouldn't believe it.
Well, we're going to need to get another dinner going with you and Miller and you know, the dinner we had a couple years ago with you and Parnelli. Oh, that was fun. They were picking on you pretty hard. I know you were mad at me. I wasn't standing up for Uncle Bobby as much as I should have, but that was my fault there. But, yeah, I'll look forward. If I don't see you beforehand, like I said, I'm going to try and fly down and see you before.
And that was Uncle Bobby closing out our look back at the inaugural season plus the second season of IROC. I'm so thankful to our friends here who've taken the time to bring some of these stories of old to the present again, knowing that we can indeed call Roger, call an Uncle Bobby, and they'll make time because they also appreciate being able to share these tales with you. So we are definitely blessed to have wonderful, wonderful contributors to the good old podcast here. Last thing I'll mention, we are just a few days away from launching the new MarshallPruittPodcast.com site that will carry every episode we have ever published. We're almost at 500 episodes, and we'll have some other fun stuff too coming with brand new 2019 t-shirts specifically representing our Week in IndyCar, Week in Sports Car, and our Inside the Sports Car Paddock shows, and some other fun too. All right, with all that said, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is the Marshall Pruitt Podcast brought to you by Cooper Tires and the Justice Brothers. Thank you for listening.